This episode of the Ortho Bullets podcast will go over the topic of phalanx dislocations from the hand section on orthobullets.com. Phalanx dislocations are common traumatic injuries of the hand involving the proximal interphalangeal joint or the distal interphalangeal joint. Treatment is close reduction and splinting unless the volar plate entrapment blocks reduction or a concomitant fracture renders the joint unstable. Injury patterns can be broken into the PIP joint and the DIP joint. PIP joint dislocations can be volar, dorsal, or lateral. With respect to the DIP joint, there can also be dislocations or fracture dislocations. Associated conditions with phalanx dislocations can include swan neck deformities and nail bed injuries, which are usually associated with distal phalanx fractures. Now, let's go over some relevant anatomy. We'll go over the distal interphalangeal joint, or DIP joint, and the proximal interphalangeal joint, or the PIP joint. With respect to the osteology of the distal interphalangeal joint, this is considered a hinge joint. It is stabilized by the collateral ligaments, the terminal extensor tendon, the FDP, and the volar plate. The collateral ligaments are comprised of proper and accessory collateral ligaments. Both originate from the middle phalanx condyles. The proper collateral ligament inserts on the volar base of the distal phalanx, the accessory collateral ligament inserts on the volar plate, and remember that the collateral ligaments act as a restraint against radial and ulnar deviation. The terminal extensor tendon inserts on the dorsal base of the distal phalanx. The FDP inserts on the volar base of the distal phalanx. And finally, the volar plate inserts on the volar base of the distal phalanx, does not form check rein ligaments, and acts as a restraint against hyperextension. So again, the volar plate inserts on the volar base of the distal phalanx, does not form check rein ligaments, and acts as a restraint against hyperextension. Moving on to the proximal interphalangeal joint, it is also considered a hinge joint. It is stabilized by the collateral ligaments, the central slip, the FDS, and the volar plate. The collateral ligaments, again, are comprised of the proper and accessory collateral ligaments. Both originate from the proximal phalanx condyles. The proper collateral ligament inserts on the volar base of the middle phalanx. The accessory collateral ligament inserts on the volar plate. And once again, the collateral ligaments act as a restraint against radial and ulnar deviation. The central slip inserts on the dorsal base of the middle phalanx, and the FDS inserts on the volar shaft of the middle phalanx. The volar plate inserts on the volar base of the middle phalanx, and forms two check rein ligaments proximally that attach to the proximal phalanx. Remember once again that the volar plate acts as a restraint against hyperextension. As far as the presentation of phalanx dislocations, with inspection on physical exam, you may notice pain and deformity of the affected digit, and skin puckering may indicate interposition of the soft tissues within the joint. As far as motion, it's important to assess stability of the joint after reduction. You can test passive stability with lateral stress, hyperextension, and Elson's test. Lateral stress is performed with the joint in full extension and in 30 degrees of flexion. This assesses the competency of the collateral ligaments when stressed in flexion. Collateral ligament injury can be classified into three grades. Grade 1 is pain with no laxity. Grade 2 is laxity with a firm endpoint and a stable arc of motion. And grade 3 has gross instability with no endpoint. Lateral stress will also assess competency of the secondary stabilizers, that is the bony anatomy, accessory collateral ligaments, and volar plate when stressed in extension. Other ways to test passive stability include hyperextension, which assesses the competency of the volar plate, and Elson's test, which assesses integrity of the central slip. As far as testing active stability, this can be done with flexion slash extension. Ability to achieve full range of motion indicates a stable joint. As far as the neurovascular exam, make sure to evaluate sensation in the adjacent digits, as traction neuropraxia may occur due to stretching of the adjacent digital nerves. Moving on to imaging, recommended views on radiographs include an AP, lateral, and oblique. Findings include the V sign, which results from dorsal joint widening, and this indicates subtle subluxation. Now, let's talk about PIP dislocations in a bit more detail. Remember that dorsal dislocations are more common than volar dislocations. Dorsal dislocations can lead to a swan neck deformity, and volar dislocations can lead to a boutonniere deformity. So again, dorsal dislocations are more common than volar dislocations. Dorsal dislocations can lead to a swan neck deformity, and volar dislocations can lead to a boutonniere deformity. As far as the epidemiology, the PIP joint is the most commonly injured joint in the hand. As far as the classification, you have dorsal dislocations, volar dislocations, and lateral dislocations. Dorsal dislocations results from PIP joint hyperextension with longitudinal compression, for example, a ball striking a fingertip. Dorsal dislocations leads to tearing of the collateral ligaments and shearing of the volar plate off the base of the middle phalanx. This is commonly seen with small avulsion fractures of the base of the middle phalanx. Dorsal dislocations can be simple or complex. Simple dislocations can result from hyperextension deformity, and the middle phalanx remains in contact with the condyles of the proximal phalanx. A complex dorsal dislocation will cause a bayonet deformity. This involves the base of the middle phalanx that is not in contact with the condyle of the proximal phalanx, and the volar plate can act as a block to reduction with longitudinal traction. Volar dislocations can be simple or rotatory. Simple dislocations are dislocations without rotation and results from a rupture of the central slip. Rotatory dislocations are dislocation with rotation. This results from rupture of one collateral ligament with the other remaining intact. In rotatory volar dislocations, one of the proximal phalangeal condyles buttonholes between the central slip and lateral band. Lateral dislocations results from rupture of one collateral ligament and at least partial avulsion of the volar plate from the middle phalanx. Treatment of PIP dislocations can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes closed reduction and buddy taping or splinting. This is indicated for simple dorsal dislocations, which is usually performed by the patient. It's also indicated for simple volar dislocations and lateral dislocations. As far as the reduction technique, if there's a simple dorsal dislocation, reduce this with force directed volarly and inflection. If there's a complex dorsal dislocation, reduce with hyperextension of the middle phalanx followed by palmar force. If there's a rotatory volar dislocation, reduce by applying traction to the finger with the MCP and PIP joints in 90 degrees of flexion. Flexion relaxes the volarly displaced lateral band, allowing it to slip back dorsally. Make sure that you assess stability after reduction. Buddy taping to the adjacent finger should be done for 3 to 6 weeks if there's a dorsal dislocation that is stable after reduction or in the setting of a lateral dislocation. An extension block splinting should be done if the dorsal dislocation is unstable after reduction. An extension splinting should be done for 6 to 8 weeks if there is a volar dislocation. So again, buddy taping to the adjacent finger for 3 to 6 weeks if there's a dorsal dislocation that is stable after reduction or in the setting of a lateral dislocation. Extension block splinting should be done if there's a dorsal dislocation that is unstable after reduction. And extension splinting should be done for 6 to 8 weeks if there's a volar dislocation. Operative options include open reduction. This is indicated in failed closed reductions. And remember that in closed dorsal dislocations, reduction is usually prevented by volar plate interposition. In open dorsal dislocations, reduction is usually prevented by a dislocated FDP tendon. And in lateral dislocations, reduction is usually prevented by lateral band interposition. As far as operative techniques, in the setting of a dorsal dislocation, perform the dorsal approach with the incision between the central slip and the lateral band. In the setting of rotatory volar dislocations, perform a dorsolateral approach. Some complications to consider in the setting of a PIP dislocation includes PIP flexion contracture or a pseudo-boutonniere, a swan neck deformity, and extensor lag. With respect to a PIP flexion contracture or a pseudo-boutonniere, this may develop but usually resolves with therapy. This is more commonly seen in volar dislocations. A swan neck deformity occurs secondary to a volar plate injury and is seen in dorsal dislocations. An extensor lag is seen in volar dislocations. Moving on to PIP fracture dislocations, these injuries can be volar or dorsal. Volar lip fractures are the most common fracture pattern seen with dorsal dislocations. Again, volar lip fractures are the most common fracture pattern seen with dorsal dislocations. Keep in mind that a highly comminuted fracture may occur and is known as a pilon. As far as the pathophysiology of PIP fracture dislocations, the mechanism of injury can be from an avulsion or an impaction shear. With respect to avulsion, in dorsal PIP joint fracture dislocations, hyperextension leads to failure of the volar plate, resulting in rupture or avulsion of the middle phalangeal volar lip. In volar PIP joint fracture dislocations, hyperflexion leads to failure of the central slip, resulting in rupture or avulsion of the middle phalangeal dorsal lip. With respect to impaction shear, axial loading of the finger with the PIP joint in flexion or extension leads to dorsal and volar fracture dislocations, respectively. The classification of PIP fracture dislocations is the Hastings classification, and there are three types. This is based on the amount of P2 articular surface involvement and stability. So type 1 has less than 30% amount of P2 articular surface involvement, and these types are stable. Type 2 has 30 to 50% amount of P2 articular surface involvement, and the stability is tenuous. Type 3 has greater than 50% amount of P2 articular surface involvement, and these are unstable injuries. Treatment of PIP fracture dislocations can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management involves close reduction and splinting. This is indicated if there is less than 40% joint involved and the joint is stable. As far as the technique for non-operative management, extension block splinting can be used if there is a dorsal fracture dislocation, and extension splinting can be used if there is a volar fracture dislocation. As far as outcome, regardless of treatment, you must achieve adequate joint reduction for favorable long-term outcome. Operative options include closed reduction percutaneous pinning versus open reduction internal fixation. This is indicated if there is greater than 40% of the joint involved and the joint is unstable. As far as the technique, reduction of the middle phalanx on the condyles of the proximal phalanx is the primary goal. Adequate volar exposure of the volar plate requires resection of the proximal portion of the C2 pulley, the entire A3 pulley, and the distal C1 pulley. Again, adequate volar exposure of the volar plate requires resection of the proximal portion of the C2 pulley, the entire A3 pulley, and the distal C1 pulley. As far as outcomes, articular surface reconstruction is desirable, but not necessary for a good clinical outcome. Keep in mind that PIP subluxation inhibits the gliding arc of the joint and leads to a poor clinical outcome. Other operative options include dynamic distraction external fixation and volar plate arthroplasty versus arthrodesis. Indications for a dynamic distraction external fixation is for highly comminuted pilon fracture dislocations. Dynamic distraction external fixation should follow with early mobilization. Indications for a volar plate arthroplasty versus arthrodesis is for chronic injuries. Finally, moving on to DIP dislocations and fracture dislocations, DIP joint dislocations are usually dorsal or lateral. Volar dislocations are rare. Keep in mind that DIP dislocations and fracture dislocations are often associated with open wounds due to the tight, soft tissue envelope. As far as the classification of these injuries, DIP joint dislocations can be dorsal, volar, or lateral. However, keep in mind that volar dislocations are rare. As far as DIP joint fracture dislocations, these can be volar or dorsal. Volar fracture dislocations are associated with the avulsion of the dorsal lip / terminal tendon, and dorsal fracture dislocations are associated with avulsion of the volar lip / FDP. Treatment of DIP dislocations and fracture dislocations can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management involves close reduction plus or minus splinting, and this is indicated as the first line of treatment. As far as the technique, if there is a dorsal DIP joint dislocation, reduce with longitudinal traction, direct pressure on the dorsal aspect of the distal phalanx, and DIP joint flexion. Make sure to perform a thorough irrigation and debridement if the injury is open. Dorsal splinting is typically done in slight flexion for 2 to 3 weeks if there is a dorsal dislocation that is unstable after reduction. Again, dorsal splinting in slight flexion should be done for 2 to 3 weeks if there is a dorsal dislocation that is unstable after reduction. Extension splinting should be done for 6 weeks if there is a volar dislocation. Again, extension splinting should be done for 6 weeks if there is a volar dislocation. Finally, tuft fractures require no specific treatment. However, you can consider temporary splinting, and rarely these injuries may require pinning. Operative options for DIP dislocations and fracture dislocations include open reduction plus or minus FDP repair, volar plate arthroplasty, and amputation. Open reduction plus or minus FDP repair is indicated if two reduction attempts fail. Remember, in closed dorsal DIP joint dislocations, volar plate interposition is the most common block to reduction. Again, in closed dorsal DIP joint dislocations, volar plate interposition is the most common block to reduction. Remember also that the FTP may be blocking reduction if the injury is open. In volar DIP joint dislocations, terminal tendon interposition can prevent reduction. As far as the technique for an open reduction plus or minus FTP repair, perform an FTP repair if the dorsal fracture dislocation is where the FTP is attached to the volar fragment, and keep in mind that this procedure may require percutaneous pinning to support the nail bed repair. Volar plate arthroplasty is indicated if there is greater than 40% joint involved and the joint is unstable. Finally, an amputation is indicated in highly comminuted injuries with significant soft tissue loss or neurovascular injury. Some complications to consider in the setting of DIP dislocations and fracture dislocations include DIP joint stiffness and mallet finger deformity, which is seen with volar dislocations. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, what anatomic structure must be excised when performing a volar plate arthroplasty of the proximal interphalangeal joint? And the choices are 1, central slip, 2, collateral ligament, 3, checkerain ligament, 4, triangular ligament, and 5, flexor digitorum superficialis insertion. The correct answer to this question is 2, collateral ligament. So the collateral ligament must be excised or released from the proximal phalanx to allow gliding of the middle phalanx on the articular surface of the proximal phalanx. Failure to do so may prevent this gliding motion and make the middle phalanx just hinge on the proximal phalanx. And moving on to the final question, what is the most frequently encountered form of osseous injury associated with dorsal proximal interphalangeal joint fracture dislocations? And the choices are 1, middle phalanx palmar lip fractures, 2, proximal phalanx extra-articular fractures, 3, middle phalanx dorsal lip fractures, 4, middle phalanx dorsal and palmar lip fractures, otherwise known as a pilon, and 5, proximal phalanx palmar lip fractures. The correct answer to this question is 1, middle phalanx palmar lip fractures. So middle phalanx palmar lip fractures are the most frequently encountered form of osseous injury associated with dorsal PIP joint fracture dislocations. Pure PIP joint hyperextension often disrupts the palmar plate either at its distal insertion or by creating a tension fracture at the palmar lip of the middle phalanx. The review article by Kiefhaber and Stern detailed that the restoration of the middle phalangeal base to glide around the proximal phalangeal head during the flexion arc is the primary goal. Hinging instead of articular gliding at the fracture site must be avoided by eliminating joint subluxation and then re-establish joint stability to prevent recurrent subluxation. Early motion of the PIP and anatomic restoration of the fractured joint surface is desirable, but is secondary compared to reduction of the middle phalanx on the condyles of the proximal phalanx. That's all for this review about phalanx dislocations. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.